In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
On this week's show, we're looking at one of the most fundamental aspects of government, which is whether or not you can trust it. In particular, we're looking at what's becoming clearly a two-tier justice system, as, in full view, we have two back-to-back cases as the perfect examples of what happens if you're a Democrat deep stater, and, conversely, what happens if you support Donald Trump. First, the DOJ declined to prosecute Andrew McCabe. McCabe is the former deputy director of the FBI who lied to investigators about his leaks to the media and also lied to Congress about the investigations to candidate and then President Trump. Lie to Congress? Meh, no biggie. Unless you're a Trump supporter like Roger Stone, who not only was prosecuted for lies, but was actually sentenced on Thursday to 40 months in jail. 3 years, 4 months, for the exact same crime, for which McCabe got nothing. What is going on? And I'm sick of it, because there will be no trust in American justice until this stops. Your politics should not play any part in whether you're prosecuted or the level of punishment, but we are now seeing this all the time. It's not even just these high-profile cases. We're seeing it in everyday cases. Some lunatic drives into and tries to run down Trump supporters, and he's not even charged with a hate crime. Someone burns an LGBTQ flag and gets 16 years in prison. I thought burning flags was a protected First Amendment speech. Or it is if you're a lefty burning an American flag. It won't be long until judges in civil cases, dealing with taxes or employment or contract disputes, suddenly bring politics into things. You can't fire that employee who stole from you. They're a Democrat. Of course you can break that contract. It was with a Republican. That's perfectly okay. Or, God forbid, divorce court. Imagine the utter mess that would be. Okay, on today's show, we're going to do a little venting about McCabe. Because shouldn't the person who used the FBI to try to take down the presidency face at least a little jail time? I'd like to welcome now Scott McEwen. He's co-author of the New York Times bestselling book, American Sniper. He's also the author of his own Sniper Elite series and a new Camp Valor series, which we'll definitely talk about later. Scott, it's good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you as well. I'm glad you guys are still out there and expanding in the Oregon market. We need it.
Oh, yes. I appreciate that. So I'd really like to talk to you about justice for McCabe here, because this is a guy that has once again managed to escape justice. It's just one more Obama official that we know has committed crimes and yet for some reason just doesn't get any prosecution. So I'd really like to get your thoughts on this from both a prosecutor's standpoint and from a defense lawyer's viewpoint. But let's start on the prosecution side. We know he clearly lied, so why not bring him to trial?
Yeah, you know, there's been some interesting articles that have come out, Mark, and I'm not sure what is true and what is not. And the reason I say that is this. This Department of Justice now with Barr and Durham and, you know, and some other people that I actually know personally in that Jeff Rosen, who's the assistant AG, et cetera. And, you know, they have been pretty closed mouth about what is going on. Now, there was recently a story floated on McCabe that said that he had been exonerated or somehow cleared, if you will, from prosecution, you know, in something that came out. But as I vetted that story, you know, there are other stories out there that say that the investigations are continuing, and I know that he has not gotten a, if you will, pass. So I'm not certain what is going on with that whole level of investigation with the former FBI people, including McCabe and others. But I'll tell you this right now, I do not believe that that investigation is over, and he clearly lied to Congress, at least, as well as others, in his actions that he took, yeah. And we know he leaked documents as well.
So from a prosecutor's standpoint, though, would you, why would you not, if you know he lied, why would you not bring those charges? Because if there is another prosecution out there, wouldn't that give you leverage for the second one? Why would you drop this one?
It certainly would. And, you know, and to say that you've dropped the prosecution or dropped the investigation does not mean that there's not other issues that are being investigated. And maybe it was in part, I guess, some of the then existing, if you will, investigation material. I don't know. I don't know what target letters were sent out, because generally what happens is, as a prosecutor, you send out what's called a target letter. In other words, you let the defendant know that he is currently being investigated for crimes. And you may or may not define those crimes, but you have a responsibility, if you're asking for information, to let the defendant know that they are under or a subject of investigation for potential prosecution. Now, I have not seen the documents to say that they got a get out of jail free card, or I should say a lack of prosecution card, because it hasn't been the practice of this prosecutor that I've seen, nor do I believe it is a good practice to say, okay, well, that's over. So, I mean, what happens is you see floating information coming out from these defense lawyers in D.C., mostly defending these ex-Obama officials, that say, okay, well, that investigation is over, therefore they've been cleared. And I think the only purpose they do that for is to be able to say later on, well, you stop that investigation, or otherwise make some argument that the investigation no longer continues. I do not believe that to be the case. I certainly don't hope that's the case. And I hope that investigation of McCabe continues, and I hope those people will be prosecuted because they deserve to be.
Well, as far as letting them know that they're under criminal investigation, that's certainly something that should have happened in Flynn's case, and yet somehow, again, those prosecutors that did that and the FBI people are getting away with that one as well. But let's look at this from a defense lawyer's angle. If it had gone to trial, I mean, how or you know, as part of this prosecution, how would you have defended McCabe and tried to knock holes in the whole he lied angle?
Well, I think the way I would have done it is that, you obviously have to say, look, I was either acting on orders or I was told to do certain things from a higher level. In other words, if he's been told to do things, you know, from a different level, either from the attorney general's office or from some other office, directly from the president, whatever happens, then that's a defense to otherwise acts that would seem to be clearly criminal. Now, is it a complete defense or a 100% defense? You know, certainly not. But, none of these guys have gotten to the point yet where they are alleged, or I should say charged, with these crimes for them to start taking these defenses. And that's what's most mystifying to me and frustrating, is when is Barr and Durham and the rest of them, when are they going to actually bring a case against what we know is clearly criminal activity?
Yes.
And when is that activity going to be prosecuted?
Yes. Well, I definitely want to talk to you more about that in the next segment, though. In terms of him being ordered to do things, that's an interesting angle, because if he was ordered, that might explain why they dropped this, is because they're looking at taking it up that next level. One of the big problems, though, with this system is the whole selective prosecution. Trump supporters get the book thrown at them. Democrats don't. So as a defense lawyer, though, could you not use the system itself as your defense? Meaning, look, you didn't prosecute Comey for lying or all of these others for lying. So how can you charge my client with lying? Is that a valid defense?
Certainly. It's certainly a valid argument. I mean, there's a concept in the law that says two wrongs don't make a right, and two criminal acts do not, where one is prosecuted and the other is not, do not certainly make a right. But it certainly makes them look terrible. And that's exactly, in many ways, what Flynn is doing right now. We see, General Flynn saying, look, there may have been a situation here where I did not completely disclose something, and I don't even know if it was criminal. I think it was more, if you will, negligent on his part, but it may have been, I don't know, it may have been intentional, I'm not certain. But at the end of the day, nobody else got prosecuted. Flynn did, for allegedly lying to the FBI, and the prosecution that they did through the FBI is Comey was crowing about the fact that he sent his guys in there when he was clearly a target.
Yes.
And amazingly, Flynn was willing to talk to him. He said, I've never seen that before. You would never have seen that under the Bush administration or the Obama administration. And I was able to just walk in there and catch him, supposedly lying. But the problem is the 302s we know now on Flynn, i.e. the allegedly lying statements, were altered. by Strozek and Page, and we know they were changed to show that there was an alleged lie.
Flynn,
unfortunately, was bankrupt, or being bankrupt by all these investigations, and hence he pled to a crime that I believe was really not well thought out. And, you know, just because he didn't want his wife and kid to be also prosecuted or investigated. So he wanted to try and stop the bleeding. And, you know, and it really was a tragedy. I think the Flynn case is exhibit A for the lack of, if you will, consistent prosecution and the fact that Mueller and the rest of these guys were way out of control.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, time for a break. We'll continue with best-selling author Scott McKeown. There may be an interesting twist yet to the whole McCabe situation. We'll talk about that next. And welcome back. We're talking today to Scott McKeown. He's co-author of the New York Times best-selling book, American Sniper. And he has his own series of books out there, the Sniper Elite series and also the New Camp Valor series, which we'll be talking about in the next segment here. Scott, before we let this whole McCabe situation go, you had touched on this briefly in the last segment there. There's a story in the Washington Examiner that claims the McCabe dismissal was really just a ruse to distract people while the real investigation is coming up. Andrew Weissman of Mueller Investigation Infamy said on MSNBC that the Justice Department swapped out the loser case of Andrew McCabe, who was, had escaped those criminal charges for lying to investigators about the media, his leaks to the media, for a fresh one targeting top former FBI officials, including McCabe, and then also Comey and Peter Strzok as well. This case is going to be led by Jeffrey Jensen, the U.S. Attorney for Eastern District of Missouri. So what do you make of this?
Well, what I make of it is that, you know, this Jensen is real, and I think that this investigation continues. And I don't think they're giving up. You know, I think that when you're dealing with Kirkland and Ellis and you're dealing with, you know, Barr, Rosen, you know, former, you know, Starr was from Kirkland and Ellis. These are a legit group of lawyers. I worked with them when I was defending General Motors. These guys are all great trial lawyers. They're most of them are pretty conservative, but they're basically the law firm in Washington, D.C. that puts out some pretty well thought out men and women, in my opinion. And I'm very hopeful that anecdote, if you will, that Weissman made, who's a nefarious character in and of himself on several different things, not just the Mueller investigation. Let's face it, also all of his prosecutions of Arthur Anderson were ultimately thrown out for chicanery that he pulled in prosecutorial misconduct. This guy is a real bad actor. And I say that knowing that he is now an MSNBC, or one of them, I think MSNBC is his company he works with now, you know, as far as the media, the fake media is concerned. But he has mentioned the fact that these are still going on, and he would probably have an underground route to know that that is happening. I do not believe these investigations are over. I don't believe these guys are exonerated or even, you know, stopped investigating. And I think it's going to be easy prosecution. They just need to pick the best guy, and he'll rat on the rest of them, in my opinion.
Well, I certainly hope that's the case, because right now it just galls me to no end that these people, McCabe and Comey and a host of others who all clearly have lied, who were part of the coup attempt by our own government to take out a president, that they're not getting any punishment whatsoever, other than, I guess, the punishment of having to endure massive book deals and high-paid gigs on CNN or MSNBC. How much faith, if you had to lay a bet on it right now, how much faith do you have that, yes, one of these guys will, in fact, face justice?
I would lay a bet at more than 75% that they're going to go after some high-ranking guys. You know, I remain hopeful that the ranks go as high as Comey, as high as Brennan, and a few of the others that were involved in this attempted coup, and these FISA warrants and the rest of these illegal activities. I think there's enough upset judges, federal judges, that, you know, may have come from different political persuasions, for example, than the current administration, but are certainly sick of the lying that's gone on. And I don't believe that they're going to be that they're going to get away scot-free. And I believe there are going to be prosecutions. Timing-wise, I think Barr is going to get good cases. I think Durham is going to have good cases, ironclad cases. And I think that's really when you see that first person indicted is when you're going to see the people start talking. And that's when you're going to get the prosecutions of many, many different levels. I still believe it's going to happen, and I will continue to do so. It may, in fact, even happen after the election. I don't know what the timing is, but I believe if Trump is reelected, there will be justice.
Well, I would agree with that. Because at that point, because I can understand where some of it is coming from right now, is that you may be taking a little bit cautious approach right now, that you don't want to make this look like it's purely political, that it was in fact due to wrongdoing, not because of politics. But you know, I'm just so dang tired of waiting for the next case. I don't want to wait for the next case. I want to see some justice with this case.
We're all frustrated. That's for sure.
Beyond frustrated at this point. Yeah, I do want to talk to you a bit about this coronavirus. It's not something that's going to go away anytime soon, so I'd like to have you back on to talk about it a little bit more. But there are just some really weird things going on with this, and it's just hard to even know what's reliable and what isn't. You had posted a story on, I think it was from AmericanMilitary.com, and it says this: funeral homes in central China are working round the clock to cremate bodies during the coronavirus epidemic while advertising to recruit manual workers to collect dead bodies from people's homes by night. Okay, that right there is kind of really weird, because it's a country of a billion people. Funeral homes shouldn't be working round the clock if it's just a couple hundred more deaths. I mean, that doesn't even make sense. So something right there seems like there's something else going on here, and we just don't have real reliable information on numbers or the extent of this. So what's your take on this situation in China?
It's far, far more widespread than is being advertised. I think that the coronavirus has a much higher lethality rate, you know, because they were trying to advertise it was something similar to a really bad flu strain, i.e., you know, 1%, possibly 2%. I think it's a much higher lethality rate of those infected than that. And I think that we are going to see ultimately, and I'm not trying to be a conspiratory theory guy, I think we're ultimately going to see something from the communist Chinese that could rival, if not exceed, what we saw with the communist Russians and the communist USSR with Chernobyl. I think we've got a situation here that's way out of control. I think when you shut down every major airline going into or out of a country, Mark, you've got a situation that is much greater and much more dangerous than the government, even of our own country, although I think it was very appropriate what basically Trump has done, which said that anybody coming in from that nation must be quarantined in military bases at this juncture. When have you ever heard of that with a flu-type virus?
Yeah.
I mean, just look at the ostensible open evidence that we have, and it tells you that we're not getting the whole story and they're trying to avoid panic. I mean, I think that the Chinese government is lying through their teeth, and it wouldn't be the first communist government to do so. And I think that people look at that, and if they want to vote for Bernie, they better take good note of what's going on.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break there. Come back, we'll talk about his newest book, The Trigger Mechanisms, just hit the shelves. Stay with us. More with best-selling author Scott McEwen. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, talking today to author Scott McEwen. He is the best-selling author of American Sniper, and he has his own series of books out there, Sniper Elite Series. Great series of books if you're into the military at all, and very suspenseful. And then also now the Camp Valor series, and this is really intended for young people. Also, really great book, and very much enjoyed the first one. And we're anxiously awaiting the third book, The Trigger Mechanism. It's just hit the shelves. So, Scott, I'd just like to read this from Amazon. It says, when Jalen, a young gamer, puts on a set of VR goggles and logs into an online video game, he enters a digital world where, as in most games, points are awarded for kills. Only this time, unbeknownst to Jalen, the company has been re-engineered by a cyber terrorist known as Ensight so that real human lives are taken with a click of a button. When Jalen logs off, he learns he's just killed 53 innocent people. I mean, that's pretty awesome grab there for people. So what can you tell us about this book?
This book is the second in the series, Camp Valor series. I wanted to bring a message of patriotism to a younger generation, the you know, and that's fun, that's exciting, that's a camp that every kid out there would love to go to, and that's really Camp Valor. It's a camp that kids, if you will, get to drive cars, jump out of airplanes, shoot guns, defend the United States, and essentially they are infiltrated into bad guy organizations, many of them darknet organizations. Particularly in the second book, it involves a darknet organization reference that takes over vehicles with this new these new driverless vehicles and things of this nature, and essentially yes. makes them into weapons. And the kids are actually controlling them unbeknownst to them. And they have to infiltrate and take care of the bad guys at the end of the day, because it's only young gamers that can kind of get into this world because of their knowledge of these video games and things of that nature. Mm. It's done extremely well. The first book rose up to number 8 out of, you know, whatever, 8 million titles on Amazon. And we're seeing a huge rise on this one as well. And so I'm really pleased that the book has been received. And it's a fun book for kids to really, and for parents to give to kids, that's got a great message at the end of the day.
Well, that's really cool to hear how well it's doing already, and we would really recommend this to anybody that's got some young kids in their lives. My producer is over here thumping her chest. She wants her copy ASAP as well. So I know that both of us really enjoyed the first book, so we're definitely looking forward to getting our hands on this one. You mentioned this notion of tapping into these driverless cars. That has been something of my own concern for a long time. I thought, you know, there you are driving along the highway 60, 70, 80 miles an hour, and all of a sudden your car gets hacked. I mean, that, you know, and suddenly, and not just yours, but suddenly everybody's cars starts veering into each other's. That's just horrifying to think. But I would like to mention that librarians have picked this as a recommended read for young adults. Is that correct?
Yeah, we've had 4 different state libraries say it's a recommended read for young adults. And, you know, some of the funnest things I get is from 8th graders and younger kids, like, writing into the website, to scottmcewen.com and also campvalorbooks.com, and saying, look, you know, we've gotten our liberal teachers to agree that this will be our suggested read of the month. The whole class has been reading it, and they love it. And, you know, and the boys in the class are actually reading a book, which is a very, you know, exceptional thing in and of itself. So we're getting the right kind of reaction, Mark, from kids. And, you know, and I'm very happy to see that the libraries are seeing that kids like to read enjoyable, patriotic materials such as this. And it doesn't all have to be a liberal message that we see so often from the young adult press.
Yes.
In addition, I'd like to announce that Camp Valor has now been named a camp in Op 300 in Florida. They named their camp after the book set, and
that's awesome.
And they named that camp Camp Valor, and that is for kids, the fallen military members. They're able to go there and attend a camp, and the camp will be Camp Valor, and get a little something back after they've lost their parent, you know, in the many wars that we've fought. And I'm really happy to do that. And that's also on campvalorbooks.com. We've got a place for people to donate to op300.org and the Camp Valor Camp.
Well, that's really cool. As far as the camp itself that has been named after Camp Valor, are there elements of Camp Valor at Camp Valor? In other words, do they have like military-style trainings? What do kids go through there?
Now it's more of a just a weekend to take a parent, your surviving parent, out and have a weekend outdoors, although they do bow and arrow. They do shooting classes. They do outdoor, you know, kind of survival classes. But we are gearing up now, since you asked me, and we are going to actually, we're in the works right now to put on a Camp Valor extended camp that's going to have a little bit more of the military buds type training for a little bit older set of kids
go through
that type of experience.
That's really cool. And are they bringing in current military as well that are actually putting on these trainings?
We got Navy SEALs that are volunteering, putting their hands up all over the country, and there will be Navy SEALs training at that Camp Valor.
Oh, that's awesome. That sounds so cool. So in terms of Camp Valor itself, I can't recall. Has that already been optioned for a movie? Is that one in the works?
It's interesting because it was optioned before by Radar Films that did the Jumanji series. That option did not get made, but we are now again in active negotiations with both Netflix and Amazon. And I can't say which of the two is closer to getting it, but I believe we're going to have a series deal on one of those two, probably announced within the next 30 days.
Wow, that is terrific. That book, again, A Trigger Mechanism, it just hit the shelves. We'll have links to that up on iSpyRadio.com and also the first book, Camp Valor, as well. So, Scott, this is really exciting. I look forward to seeing its success, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you guys so much for having me on. I really enjoy it always. And you guys keep bringing the word, because my home state of Oregon is very important to me. And I know we need to bring the word back and try and keep this socialist, if you will, bent that's going on up there in check.
It is crazy. And up next, John Kiriakou, former CIA officer who did go to jail for lying. You can bet he's got something to say about McCabe getting off free. When the news first broke that the DOJ would not prosecute Andrew McCabe, who was yet another anti-Trump deep stater who lied to investigators, the very crime that so many others have been put in jail over, we were outraged. And we thought, now who could we have on our show to do a little venting with? Why, John Kiriakou, of course. John is a former CIA whistleblower, frequent guest here on iSpy, and one of those people who was forced to plead guilty to lying to investigators to avoid even worse charges. John, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, well, venting is it. You know, McCabe, as angry as I was about it, I just can't even begin to imagine what must have been going through your head when you heard this guy was not going to be prosecuted for the very crime that you actually served time for. Would you care to vent a little?
Yes, I would love to vent. First of all, I want to say that I'm glad you used the term deep stater when describing Andrew McCabe, because that's exactly what he is.
Oh, absolutely.
We forget the long careers that people like Andrew McCabe have. Andrew McCabe, just because he happens to have been the deputy FBI director during the Trump administration, does not mean that he just appeared out of thin air when Donald Trump was elected president. Mm-hmm. He had a very long career. He came of age during the Obama administration and has never made any apologies for that. So, you know, there is a deep state. We've had this conversation before. It bears repeating. There is a deep state. You don't have to call it the deep state. You can call it the federal bureaucracy or the state or whatever. But when it comes to people at that high level in places like the FBI and the CIA and the rest of the intelligence community and the federal law enforcement community, the fix is in.
Yes,
and absolutely. They protect themselves. And that's what we saw here.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you look at that, and you think this is a guy who is at the very top of the FBI, and yet he lies to these investigators. I mean, shouldn't he have been prosecuted just for that? I mean, he should clearly have known better.
He should have known better. He did know better. He knew he was lying. It wasn't an accident. And lying to a federal law enforcement officer is a felony, punishable by up to 5 years in prison. So he knew exactly what he was doing. This is exactly what Mike Flynn was prosecuted for.
Yes.
It was very closely related to what Roger Stone was prosecuted for. It's one of these process felonies, one of these throwaway felonies that the feds use as leverage against people to plead guilty for other things. But for whatever reason, and we can guess and speculate here on this show, he got a walk.
Hmm. Well, you know, there's so much unequal justice is what I think just floors a lot of people. I mean, just doesn't it seem a little off that if you're a Trump associate, you get the book thrown at you, and if you're a Trump hater like Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, Comey, who the IG report recommended he be prosecuted, but again, the DOJ declined, and now Andrew McCabe. I mean, we're way past this being just a coincidence that only one side of the political aisle ever sees the inside of a jail cell.
And I think what is going to be the final determinant as to whether our theory here that the fix is in is correct or not is going to be what comes out of the Durham investigation. We know that that John Durham's investigation has transformed into a criminal investigation. Durham said so himself about 6 weeks ago. We know that it is currently focused on John Brennan. Durham has requested all of Brennan's emails and his call logs from his time as CIA director. And so, you know, if Brennan walks, and I've long maintained that Brennan committed multiple crimes, not just while he was CIA director with this trumped up Russia investigation, but afterwards leaking classified information. If Brennan skates, then you know the fix is in.
Mm. I can't even imagine what will happen if the Durham investigation turns out to be a big whiff. I can't even imagine that.
I can't either. And the whole point of appointing Durham in the first place was that he's a shark. And, you know, he's the one that investigated the torture program. Although no criminal prosecutions came out of that, Barack Obama decided famously to look forward and not backward. That was Durham's investigation. Mm-hmm. So he's trusted by Bill Barr. At least that's what Barr has said publicly. We have to think that that investigation is in good hands.
Well, I certainly hope so. There was a recent article talking about the Andrew McCabe, him not having these charges pressed on him. There's rumors that there's this other bigger case that's out there. There was this guy out of Missouri that was appointed to investigate that. But, you know, I don't know if that's why they dropped these charges was because of that other one. I mean, what are your thoughts? Is something bigger in the works out there?
I would guess no. And I'll tell you why. You know, Washington is a very small town, and things leak. They leak every single day. It's virtually impossible to keep a secret in Washington. And I think that if there were something bigger afoot, we would have heard of it, because somebody would have run to a reporter, friendly or otherwise, to say something. Usually people do that because they want to feel important, because they get a thrill out of seeing their story on TV, because they're seeking revenge against somebody who did them wrong. There are a lot of motivators. But I think that at this point, somebody would have gone to the media at some point and said something, and we just haven't heard anything like that yet.
Yeah, there. I know that Weissman was on MSNBC, and he's saying that there's this other bigger investigation out there, but I don't know. I just don't trust it. Like you say, I think that if there really was one, we would have heard something about that.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go ahead and take a break a little bit early. Just when you thought your opinion of the FBI couldn't possibly get any worse, along comes a new revelation. We'll talk about that next with John Kiriakou, former CIA whistleblower. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking today to John Kiriakou. He's a former CIA officer and whistleblower. He's also the author of The Reluctant Spy and Doing Time Like a Spy. You can find out more about all of that by heading to iSpyRadio.com. We'll link those up. And also you can head to his website, JohnKiriakou.com. And John, I was saying in that last segment there that the FBI, it turns out there's some more shenanigans that happened. And buried in the Inspector General's FISA abuse report, it turns out that the Christopher Steele situation maybe worse than we had originally thought. Steele was the former, of course, the foreign spy hired by the Clinton campaign. There's your foreign interference. Through their law firm to dig up dirt on Trump, Steele's now infamous dossier became the part of the evidence used by the FBI to open a FISA warrant on Page and the basis for FBI's Crossfire Hurricane investigation as well into both candidate Trump and then later President Trump. But a report from Real Clear Investigations found that buried in the footnotes of the IG report, it turns out the FBI wasn't just getting information from Steele. They were giving him highly classified information about their own investigations. John, yeah, this is just really troubling, and it would seem to indicate that even more that our own FBI was directly interfering with an election, would it not? I mean, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that that meets the legal definition of espionage. Mm. In my case, Judge Leonie Brinkema created a precedent for an espionage charge. She defined espionage as providing national defense information to any person not entitled to receive it. As simple as that. Mm. Well, Christopher Steele is not an American citizen. He's a British national. So he's not a U.S. intelligence contractor. He didn't leave the CIA or the FBI with his security clearance and take it into the private sector so he could get rich like so many people here in Washington do. He's a foreign national. He's uncleared. So the provision to him of classified information, law enforcement or otherwise, very simply is a crime. This is a crime that the FBI committed. They provided national defense information to a person not entitled to receive it.
Hmm. Well, here's the really troubling part, I think, because according to that article on Real Clear Investigations, the FBI agents knew that the classified information that they were sharing with Steele was in fact going to be used for political reasons, because Steele told them, quote, the candidate, meaning Clinton herself, knew about Steele's work. I mean, what I find to be interesting about that is not only that, you know, they know that this is being used for politics, and so of course the question then becomes, are they doing that because of the politics? Which obviously right. I think they were. But do you think that that can help explain why Steele was fired when he began to leak details to the press, that perhaps the FBI wasn't worried about the dossier, but rather they were worried that Steele's leaks to the media could end up exposing the FBI's own partisan involvement?
I think that's exactly what they were afraid of. You know, this is like a thread that's hanging off of a sweater. You really shouldn't pull it because you're going to unravel the whole sweater. And I think that's exactly what the FBI feared. The FBI feared that one investigative reporter somewhere in town, or maybe at the New York Times or wherever, would start pulling that thread and realize that there was a whole lot of wrongdoing on the part of a whole lot of different people inside the FBI. I think I mentioned to you in a previous show that I worked with Christopher Steele when I was at the CIA. This is not the Christopher Steele that I remember. The Christopher Steele that I worked with was the epitome of a professional British intelligence officer, an MI6 officer. He was James Bond. Everybody liked and respected Chris Steele. And then he went into business for himself, and he's become a caricature. You know, so many of these guys, when they retire, they think not about the country or public service. They think about money. And that's what we have here in the case of the Steele dossier. By its nature, intelligence is unvetted. It's raw, raw information. You collect this raw information and you turn it over to analysts who can then determine what's true or likely true, what's likely not true, and then present it to policymakers to make a decision. That's not what Chris Steele did. Chris Steele went to Russia, or didn't even go to Russia, as we later learned. He called some Russians that he knew and then wrote up this ridiculous story of prostitutes urinating on Barack Obama's hotel bed at Donald Trump's behest and a whole bunch of other nonsense, none of which was borne out by any subsequent facts. And what he didn't tell anybody, including his own consumers at the FBI, was that this was really just opposition research commissioned by the Clinton campaign.
Yeah, exactly. Then in terms of Christopher Steele, though, you know, just listen to you talk about him. Was it just money that changed him, or do you think that there was something deeper that's going on here? Because if he was the epitome of the kind of guy that you would want involved in the security realm, the James Bond kind of character,
yeah,
to suddenly go to that caricature, that would seem to be more than just about money.
I actually don't blame him for that. I blame the Obama administration's intelligence leaders, because they're the ones that brought him into the fold. They were the ones that commissioned the report. I blame the likes of John Brennan, for example, because John worked closely with Chris as well, and they both rose through the ranks together in their respective services. And so I think that Brennan probably told him, look, this is what we're looking for. We're hoping you can help us find it. And he did as he was told to do and then got rich at the same time.
Well, do you think some of that is just the fact that they needed somebody that did appear, at least, or had the reputation, at least, of being impeccable, like a Christopher Steele, so they could then use that? You know, here's this report, this dossier from a Christopher Steele type of person, and that then helps add credibility to the FISA warrant, because the dossier itself is just garbage.
It's garbage. I would be embarrassed to be associated with something like that dossier. It's not intelligence, raw or otherwise. It's like the National Enquirer with a classified stamp on the top and the bottom.
Well, in terms of you had mentioned, you know, this is the kind of thing that if you pull the thread, everything will unravel. So the question becomes, why haven't they started to pull that thread yet?
You know what? That is the question. That's the $64,000 question. Why has there not been an apology by the CIA and the FBI to Carter Page for this FISA abuse? Why have we not seen congressional oversight committees offering up bills to reform the FISA process? Right? Even the inspector general said that the FISA process was broken and had to be reformed. And then nobody ever heard anything about it again. So where is this reform?
Well,
I can tell you that insiders don't want reform. They want things just the way they are. And they're hoping that this just over and that everybody forgets about reform. So that when they decide they want to spy on the next guy, all they have to do is go to the FISA court and say we want a warrant.
Yeah. Well, that is ugly to even think about, but I'd like to think that Trump is not going to just let this one blow over. All right, let's go ahead and take a break there. We'll wrap things up with John Kiriakou after this. And welcome back in our final segment here on iSpy Radio. We're talking today to John Kiriakou, a former CIA officer and whistleblower. He's got two great books out there, The Reluctant Spy and Doing Time Like a Spy. We'll link all of that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. And so, John, just to kind of follow up on that last segment there where the FBI apparently was giving classified, highly classified, according to that article, highly classified information to Christopher Steele. There's also this, quote, in footnote 513 of the IG report, the Inspector General determined that Case Agent 2 did disclose classified information to Steele when he discussed information with Steele that the FBI had received from a friendly foreign government, and that he did not have prior authorization to make the disclosure. It goes on to say, sharing classified information with anyone not authorized to receive it is a crime. But sharing classified information with a non-U.S. citizen not authorized to receive it is also the very definition of harm to national security. So when can we expect somebody to go to jail for this?
Yes, exactly. Where is the espionage charge? Or multiple espionage charges. You know, the Obama administration was so quick to charge every Tom, Dick, and Harry accused of a leak with espionage. Okay, what about now? Where's the special prosecutor now? Or the U.S. attorney for Washington or the Eastern District of Virginia? Why are they silent now? Because this is their friends. These are their friends we're talking about.
Well, I don't think that we know from that IG report exactly who that was, but I bet that it's got to be somebody pretty highly placed. Very ironic if it turns out to be McCabe that was working that.
It would be ironic. Yeah. But McCabe would have been right in the middle of something like that.
Yes.
By virtue of his position.
Yeah. Well, according to that article, it was only the very people at the very top knew anything at all about that investigation, and yet they're handing that information over to Christopher Steele. So, it really begs the question, why hasn't something happened? Because I know that you and I have talked previously about this, about using of the federal government to spy on political opponents, not to mention jailing your political opponents after you've engineered their guilt. I mean, this should be something that unites every American. It just shouldn't happen. I don't think that we're there yet, because I think not everything has been disclosed just yet, but do you see a point where this really does become a unifying force, or is this Russia collusion narrative going to persist forever?
Oh my gosh. All you have to do is watch MSNBC for an hour and you'll see that they have never relented in this false narrative of Russian collusion.
Yeah.
And NPR is the same way. CNN is the same way. I was watching Don Lemon just last night. And it was Russia, Russia, Russia all over again. So I don't think so. I think we're so divided. We're so ideological. We've become so ideological that facts really don't mean anything anymore. People have their ideology. It's backed up by their mainstream corporate news network of choice, and they just sit there and congratulate themselves.
Yes. Yeah, very, very much. I do think that one of the things that could maybe really break through that shell, that protective shield of the Russia collusion narrative, could be corruption. And I was disappointed to see that the Democrats jumped on Trump saying, oh, he's using the power of the government to go after Joe Biden, and they really turned it when you read the transcripts, it's pretty clear that he was trying to look. There's this, you're coming out of a corrupt election. You've got several corrupt governments before you. And of course, the Democrats turned that around and made it look like, you know, Trump was a guilty person. You know, and again, ironically, that's what they are failing to see with the whole Russian collusion thing. So, but anyway.
Yeah.
The Bidens and the other politicians like him have clearly used their political connections to enrich themselves. You got,
Biden went before the Council on Foreign Relations and bragged about it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you've got Biden, Pelosi, Romney. I mean, it's on both sides of the aisle. There's an article in the Washington Examiner about the FBI raiding the home of a former CEO of a company that James Biden was involved in, which allegedly used the Biden name to take over some rural hospitals. And let me just read this real quick from that article and get your reaction. It's a lawsuit by businessman Michael Frey. He says, Jim Biden told me, don't worry every time someone threatens to sue you. You're with us now. Nobody is going to touch you, the lawsuit said. It was Frey's understanding that Lewitt was implying that the company was protected because of Jim Biden's connection. I mean, this is not at all what our founders had envisioned. They rejected royalty and the notion of the ruling class. I'm just floored by this, that this is the level of corruption we're seeing at that high of level of politics.
Mm-hmm. I have to agree. I don't think anybody envisioned something like this. It's influence peddling is what it is. And, you know, we saw people go to prison in the 1970s for this. Do you remember B.B. Rebozo? That's right. B.B. Rebozo. He was Richard Nixon's best friend. And he tried to use his closeness with Richard Nixon to drum up business for himself. And he went to prison for that. Mm. That's a crime. And now here we're celebrating the entrepreneurial spirit of the Biden family and congratulating them for making something out of nothing and then getting rich. And we're supposed to believe that it's not because of the closeness of Joe Biden to the Clintons or to Barack Obama.
Well, and it gets so frustrating because, you know, it's like we said moments ago, there's like this shell over the top of them that they just can't see that the Bidens are doing this. They're bending over backwards to try to defend this as though Hunter Biden is highly qualified to sit on that Ukrainian board.
Yeah, right. Tell me, and this is just a rhetorical question, of course, but what in the world qualification could Hunter Biden possibly have brought to the table that would help a Ukrainian oil or power company, energy company, whatever it was? None. He had no expertise whatsoever.
No, none whatsoever. Well, I do hope that we eventually get around to a congressional hearing. And when Hunter comes in to testify, I hope they ask all of the questions in Ukrainian.
I agree.
John, I want to thank you so much for your time today. This has been awesome.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
The system cannot and will not change until justice is once again blind and everyone either receives equal punishment or equal leniency under the law. Justice needs to be blind, especially where politics is concerned. As I've said multiple times on the show, unless and until people in government are held fully responsible for using government agencies to spy on and then try to take out President Trump, the system cannot be, nor should be, ever trusted again. Until they're frog marched out of the building, it's just a matter of time until it happens again. But the system cannot change until the people demand responsibility and actual punishment. Don't be silent. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.